Happy holidays, everyone. Happy Kwanzaa, Merry Festivus. I've got a list of grievances to discuss with you, but in the meantime, this is The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, exclusively on MoreLikeRadio.com. My name is Mark Nixon. Happy holidays, I guess. I don't really care for the holidays. I'm glad that it's over.
Everyone's going to be saying Merry Christmas again.
And that other voice that you hear is my good friend and co-host, Chris White. Do you know how long that's going to take?
I don't care.
How long is that movie, Chris? How long is Casino?
Casino's pushing 3 hours.
Three hours?
I don't know off the top of my head exactly how long it is, but am I right? I mean, it's close to 3 hours.
I originally thought it was 3.5, but it is 3. It's like 2:58. We'll get to that in a hot minute, probably as fast as Casino does. But in the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, you can follow us on The Real Thing, MLR, THEREELTHINGMLR on Twitter. You can also follow our Facebook page. Facebook is also a good way to find out when our podcasts are. You can download them on iTunes, on whatever podcast media.
Fake news outlets
that you want. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Donald Trump. In the meantime, quick rundown, because once again, Chris, for the third weekend in a row, Coco's your number one. Coco, where the fuck is she going?
Where the fuck is she going? My children don't listen to me.
Children do not listen. They don't listen.
Yeah, Coco. You know, I mean, I'm just fine. Like, I still haven't seen it, which is amazing. There's two kids' movies out in theaters now, Coco and Ferdinand. I haven't seen either one of them. I mean, technically, Ferdinand just came out, like, today or something. But,
right.
Yeah, good for them. Good for Pixar. I'm all for Pixar movies being at the top of the list. Like, Even if I see it and it's not one that I love, eventually Pixar is going to make another Inside Out or The Incredibles. They are making another Incredibles. And I love their shit. I'm happy when they're on top.
Pixar is bulletproof.
Ooh. Beep.
Wait a minute. I'm saying bulletproof because I'm saying bulletproof in the sense of, you know, like all this crap is coming out. Like, we'll get to this point in a second, but all this stuff that's coming out with all these guys, primarily guys, I'm saying.
Oh, dude.
With the sexual harassment crap.
You know John Lasseter stepped
down. That's what I'm trying to get at. Okay. So he's the head of Pixar, and he had to step down because he, you know, in all the pictures of him, by the way, he looks like one of the guys that just stayed a little too long at Margaritaville, at City Walk. Yeah. He's like all sweaty and stuff.
Definitely.
But yeah, Coco, another Pixar.
Make a movie where cars talk.
Three times. Let's add some planes with it, too. Coco made $18 million. Justice League still hanging strong at number two.
That movie is definitely a number two.
It's made $212 million, though.
It's made more than that worldwide. I mean, it's turned a profit worldwide, but it's just not the kind of... They wanted $1 billion, right? Like,
well, they also... Didn't they shuffle around the DC comic universe management?
Yeah, they put somebody else in charge or some shit. It's like, it's one of those things that's confusing. It's like, how much control do those guys have? I guess the guy that they have running their film division at Warner Brothers, their DC film division at Warner Brothers, he's essentially like the general manager, you know, on a football team.
Right.
He hires the director. He hires the writers, the producer, the people that are going to put this project together have a vision. And the guy that was hiring those people just kept fucking hiring Zack Snyder. And DC's like, or Warner Bros. Is like, okay, all right.
We're done with the slow-mo.
Enough with the dark slow-mo.
Yeah.
Which is so weird because if you went back and watched Dawn of the Dead, the remake, the Zack Snyder remake, and 300 and Watchmen, Then you and then I told you, this guy's going to go make a Superman movie and a Batman movie.
I would be about it.
Yeah, I'd be like, yeah, that works. That's a good choice. And I still think it was a good choice, but for whatever reason, it doesn't work. And it's gotten worse, in my opinion. I mean, I thought Man of Steel was okay.
Yeah.
I thought Batman versus Superman, you know, a little worse, and then I think Justice League's a little worse than that.
He did direct Man of Steel, didn't he?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
He's made 3 Superman movies.
Yeah.
So, it's just... And they also... And maybe part of the problem, too, is that he never got to make 3 Superman movies. He made a Superman movie. It was okay. The next one wasn't just a Superman movie. It was a Superman versus Batman movie, and it was billed that way.
Yeah.
It's not quite just a Superman movie, so it doesn't have that Superman feel, that, like, uplifting, rah-rah kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then Justice League even more so. Superman doesn't even show up till fucking halfway through the thing.
You a Superman Returns fan at all?
The,
Bryan Singer?
Bryan Singer movie?
Yeah, with Brand...
God, you can't even get into a conversation about movies without getting all rapey. Superman Returns got 2 of them in it.
You
got Bryan Singer and Kevin Spacey.
Oof.
Both gay, by the way. What the fuck was going on? Poor Brandon Routh on the set of that movie.
I don't know, man. Oof. All I know is that, look, I know
now
that...
I know how he got that job. Hey, like, how did Brandon Routh get this job?
It rhymes with Routh. But seriously, it's really... It was really a thing where there was all these allegations. They completely dropped Kevin Spacey off of House of Cards. It's now...
Fired his ass.
Yeah.
Fucking fired him from a movie that was to come out a month, you know, after.
Which we saw the preview for
independently
of each other, but
all
really, really, really weird.
It's weird because you can go on YouTube and watch the preview for Ridley Scott's All the Money in the World that a month ago would star Kevin Spacey and now stars Christopher Plummer. And by the way, Christopher Plummer got a fucking Golden Globe nomination for it. Did he not, I believe?
Pretty,
right?
Crazy. We'll get into that in a second
Talk
as well.
Talk about return on investment, Christopher Plummer.
He's a young spring chicken.
Jesus.
He's just acting his ass off. His 89-year-old ass, or however old he is. But the other thing, too, is that Gabriel Byrne, who was on the set acting with Kevin Spacey for The Usual Suspects, again, another Bryan Singer movie, and he was talking about how they had to delay production weeks at a time because Kevin Spacey acting creepy on set, which now, in hindsight,
you know, of all these guys, of all the Weinsteins and all the Kevin Spaceys and stuff, like, you know, a lot of them I don't give a shit. Harvey Weinstein's not in the business anymore. Fuck him. Don't care.
Don't give a shit.
Kevin Spacey, I'll miss him. I think his career's over. I'll miss him because I liked him as an actor, but you know what? Fuck him.
Yeah.
I won't miss him that much. There's other people that can do what he does. Fuck it. I don't care.
I also feel like there's going to be somebody that you're about to mention or we're thinking about, like, God damn you. Like, God damn you.
Well, I would say Louis C.K., but I don't think Louis C.K.'s career is over for a couple reasons. Number one, he wasn't fucking raping anybody. what he was doing was bad. I don't agree with it. Obviously, it's fucking reprehensible. I would be, you know, like, fucking mortified if I were in a room and some guy did that, you know.
Yeah.
If I were a woman.
If your daughter were, for example, auditioning for a fucking part and then...
Oh, I was about to say that, but you're not allowed to say that.
Well...
You're not allowed to say I've got a daughter.
Well...
Because that's somehow insensitive.
Well, I'm just...
I don't know. I've got to imagine myself as a woman.
I don't have one, so I can say that.
Maybe I don't. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe I don't have to imagine myself as a woman. It's reprehensible.
Yeah.
On paper, wherever, it's terrible. So I don't miss it. But Louis C.K., I don't think his career's over. He's fucking jerking off in front of some chicks. They were, like, horrified and ran out of the room. He owned up to it immediately. He apologized. I think Louis C.K., I'll bet we will eventually see another comedy special.
And say like 3 or something. Like a redemption tour or something that.
And in Louis C.K. style, he'll talk about it, you know? Like,
right.
I can see him doing a deep dive into that kind of thing.
Well, that's his whole shtick. His whole shtick is self-deprecating.
He's essentially been already doing it.
Yeah. Right. So you're already primed for it. Like, it's one thing to have that, but then it's another thing for, say, Morgan Spurlock to apologize to everybody over the last, you know, 10 years or so that he's been involved with anything other than Super Size Me or getting fat on purpose with McDonald's or anything. That's bullshit. I've been a terrible, terrible person. Woe is me. Oh my gosh, congratulations. You're so great. Like, why are we congratulating you again?
Yeah.
Aren't you kind of a piece of shit? Just, like, why don't you just apologize to the people and then just
apologize and go away.
Leave the fuck everyone alone.
And if you somehow, in the future... See, that's the difference between the Morgan Spurlocks and the Harvey Weinsteins and the Kevin Spaceys and Louis C.K.
Yeah.
Louis C.K. doesn't need anybody else to do what Louis C.K. does.
Yeah.
So he can put together an act and places will book him. Like, I don't think the fucking Comedy Store is going to give a shit about this in 5 years.
Yeah.
They'll book him.
Yeah.
Morgan Spurlock needs financers and he needs actors or he needs cameramen and all this kind of stuff. And same with Weinstein and same with Spacey.
Right.
Not the case with Louis C.K. I think eventually he'll come back. And again, there is something to be said for his apology, which was no holds barred. It was, I apologize. I'm going to go away now. And he has.
Yeah.
He's not doing
He's not doing the press junket, the tour with...
He bought his movie back, but that wasn't... It's not like he held a press conference and said he was going to buy his movie back and release it on his own. He bought his movie back and I probably leaked it himself to the internet somehow.
Which you've seen and I will see, which means that we will be talking about it on the next podcast, The Real Thing, on morelikeradio.com. Yeah. But we're going to talk about that right now.
I mean, we went on a fucking tangent there.
I know. That's fine. That's good. I like it. Third... the box office is Wonder, which I haven't seen. But the number four movie this past weekend...
No interest whatsoever.
I don't care.
Yeah.
That sounds terrible. It's a terrible child affliction movie that everyone's supposed to feel bad about.
It's a real actor in makeup.
It's fine.
They didn't get an actual fucked up kid.
Is it what, that one kid that was in that movie Room?
Jacob Tremblay from Room.
Yeah.
And he was good in Room. I'm sure it's good. Actually, Wonder's gotten really good reviews. It's got like a fucking 85% on Rotten Tomatoes or some shit.
I'm sure it's fine. It just doesn't
People
interest me.
People think of it favorably. It doesn't interest me either. Yeah. And I get in for free. Like the fucking movie pass. Like, go up there and I have no interest. Like,
God damn it. This is the third consecutive show that we've been touting about how fantastic Movie Pass is. And let me tell you something, folks.
Amen.
If you have any reservations about trying to get this thing, let me just say, Chris will vouch for me here, is that it is awesome. As long as you go a couple times a month, three times a month, it starts paying for itself. I literally went...
Well, one time a month it pays for itself, actually.
Yeah, because we went to independently to Brandon, to Regency 20, and the tickets over there are like $12.50, $12.55.
Yeah. Yep.
But it's $10 a month to see as many movies as you want. Oh my gosh.
I know.
And crazy. Your number four movie, which had an increase of plus 426% from the weekend before, and our first movie that we're going to talk about tonight, is The Disaster Artist.
The Disaster Artist.
Yes.
So, this is the movie that James Franco directed, based on a book which was written about the making of a movie called The Room.
Yes, which is arguably, according to the internet, which... Don't argue with the internet, please. Especially not now until net neutrality is done and over with. The Room, the 2003 movie that was written, directed, produced, and basically is the love child of one Tommy Wiseau.
It's a real-life movie. No Mickey Mouse.
It's Hollywood movie.
It's a real Hollywood movie.
Real Hollywood movie.
No Mickey Mouse stuff. Just do it.
And truth be told, I'm going to do it. Just do it.
Babyface.
You have never seen The Room.
I've never seen The Room. However, I have seen
clips.
The clips.
Yes.
Like, over the years, I've been aware of this movie. I've seen the clips.
Okay.
I've never sat down and watched The Room. You have.
Yes, at the behest of Royce and Marie of Hippo Juice, which is coming up next, presumably on morelikeradio.com, assuming that we're still in the same time slot. They have been touting this movie since I met them many, many years ago. But they also gave me the caveat, look, if you watch this movie, you have to watch it with the riff tracks. Same guys that did Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah.
Because they've got the overlaying track, making fun of the movie like MST3K always does.
Right.
And we talked a little bit about it the podcast before. I still encourage you to watch it.
Yeah, I gotta do that.
Yeah.
Having said that, I've seen the... there was articles before The Disaster Artist came out saying, do I need to see The Room before I see The Disaster Artist? And essentially the breakdown was, if you do see The Room before, you will probably get more out of The Disaster Artist, but you do not have to see The Room before you see The Disaster Artist.
And actually,
a lot of the articles said, watch the best of clips on YouTube, and then you'll get the idea.
I would concur with that.
Which is exactly what I did. I mean, I'd seen the clips through the years. I watched them again before I saw the movie, so did my wife.
Right.
And then we watched the movie, and I thought it was a really funny movie. I thought it was, it's kind of weird because there's, it's difficult to judge with movies, especially, it's hard to avoid marketing.
Yeah.
And the marketing for The Disaster Artist is marketing it like a end of the year, sort of an awards type caliber movie.
Yeah.
And indeed it did get a couple Golden Globe nominations, which we'll get into later on.
Yeah.
But it doesn't feel to me like that. It feels more like a, almost like a... like a love letter to a cult movie. Like, I mean, that's what it feels like. It's hardly something that people are going to be... that most people, 9 out of 10 people on the street, just your average movie goer that would go to Blockbuster on Friday night and rent two movies, they're not going to get much out of this movie.
Yeah, I would say it would enhance your experience if you did watch The Room. It's not necessary. It's kind of goofy if you just see it in and of itself. But if you watch The Room, of which I'd say... 75% of the people that were in my movie theater had watched. It was like a 9 o'clock show. This is the other thing too.
You saw it opening night, though.
I saw it opening night. It was really weird, by the way. Let's get off on another tangent, by the way, because Chris, you've worked at Regency 20 at AMC at some point when we were working at AMC Movie Merchants Walk 10, like one of those like training facility things. Like, hey, we need some ushers to come over here and help us out during the summer months or
I'm
anything
not
else.
Sure, I ever did work over there. Did you?
I had to.
Really?
Yeah, I had to because I had to get trained in management.
I think I did. Some we bullshit. Went there a lot to see movies.
We did go there a lot to see movies, and let me tell you something.
It's the first theater around here that had stadium seating.
Right, and now you were mentioning, too, how old is that movie theater?
It's about 20 years old.
Yeah.
Because we went and saw American Psycho and Boogie Nights over there.
Memento. We saw Hot Fuzz in Theater 2.
Did we?
Yes, we did.
Huh.
Which is right here, right? I'm pointing left, yeah, like westbound.
I was trying to remember a couple months ago where I saw Hot Fuzz. I thought I saw it in Lakeland, but you're right. We did see it in Brandon. We had to travel to see that movie.
Yeah, and we saw I swear to God, I thought we saw it with Jen and Jason, I think.
No.
We saw it with another couple.
I think we saw it, my wife's brother was there, I think.
That's Josh. Right, that's right.
Perhaps Brian, too. I don't remember
okay.
for sure. But, yeah. So anyway, yeah, Brandon is the theater in the Brandon AMC Regency is the 20-plex in Brandon, and it's about 20 years old.
Yeah. So and just to preface is that if you don't get the movie that you want to see because they're playing 17 different screens of Justice League or Star Wars: The Last Jedi, which is coming out this weekend, then you've got to go somewhere else, and the place that you go besides the Polk Theater is Regency 20. And it was weird. Friday night, 9 o'clock. Off time, okay, fine, whatever. But you would think, it's Friday. It's going to get super packed. I found a parking space because the parking lot was half empty. Like, literally walking from my car over to the box office to go get our tickets, maybe 3 minutes before when you and I were going way back in the day, because we're old as fuck, and we're walking down, what the hell is that hallway? The breezeway?
The fuck knows, breezeway. Yeah.
Breezeway, there
it's
you go.
It's a strip mall. Next, it's built on the end of a strip mall.
Yeah. So, and we got to, like, park all the way in the fucking boondocks and wanted to go see Memento or American Psycho. Like, I've seen Napoleon Dynamite over there.
And it was, there. Like, traffic, like, bumper-to-bumper traffic trying to get through the parking lot. I mean, literally, by the time you pull into the other side of the strip mall, you were going 5 miles an hour through there looking for parking spots.
Right, and then on top of all that, if you couldn't find a parking spot, then you just park wherever. Like
fucking Best Buy.
Yeah, park at a fucking right next to a dumpster or something else. Like right. It's basically like you're going.
It was one of those things.
You're going to a high school kegger.
Yeah.
You're just trying to find a parking spot that won't get you stuck in the mud,
in the grass under some shrubs.
Fuck it, whatever. I'm gonna have a good time.
Right.
So all that to say, this is that
it was dead. You saw it on Friday, I saw it on Saturday, it was dead. Now, to be fair, it's like the low time of December, for whatever reason. It's the week before Star Wars, there were no major releases. However, it was more dead than I've ever seen that place. And that's just what's going on with the movie industry. Like, back in the day, what we're talking about, it would have been busy on a Friday or Saturday night.
Right.
Regardless. Now, this is why MoviePass exists. They're trying to drum up some money, because people aren't going to the movies like they used to. They're just not.
Right.
The place was dead. It's crazy. And you told me about it, and I went the next day, and it still was.
Yeah, and on top of that, the two ideas that you've been touting for the last 2 years for the Untitled Movie Podcast and The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, they had assigned seating where, hey, you're buying your tickets right now. Tell me where you want to sit. F4, G5, pull up G12. Bill Hicks reference.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. And then A fucking full liquor bar. I'm like, how long has this been here, lady? How long has this been here, lady, that is clearly not old enough to sell me liquor, old ass man? She's like, oh, well, I don't know. I think it was here. I think I started working here, and it was right after the second Hunger Games release. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. I'm so goddamn old. I'm so fucking old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why all movie theaters aren't on board with the selling of alcohol and with the assigned seating. The assigned seating especially is really major.
Yeah.
And that I'd take that over the liquor, actually, because what assigned seating allows you to do is, I mean, obviously, it allows you to have your seat reserved and you know where you're going to sit and blah, blah, blah. You don't have to think about that. But it also allows you to not have to do that thing where you get to the theater 35 minutes early or 45 minutes early or fucking hour early if you want to see Star Wars or some shit like that. You don't have to. Matter of fact, you don't have to walk into the... You don't have to watch the previews.
You just walk the fuck in.
You can go in.
That's
late.
My seat. Four
That's
and five.
My seat. Hey, yeah. You're in my seat. Get the fuck out.
Yeah. Like fucking Cedric the Entertainer from Original Kings of Comedy. That's four and five. Four and five. Get the fuck out.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's happened to me a couple times when I've gone, I've had assigned seating somewhere,
and
the fucking usher had to...
Doctor Strange example, right? Wasn't it Doctor Strange where you're
basically... I think it happened with Doctor Strange when we went, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
People had to kick, and then it happened again recently when we went and saw Thor Ragnarok.
Okay.
The people in our seats had to kick them out. Oh, nice. Yeah. It's very satisfying. Very satisfying to stand there with your popcorn, and just shaking your head at them in disgust as they're shamed out of your seat.
See, and now I understand. Now I understand every time I'm 20, I will pay for a fucking ticket, movie ticket, sporting event, and I don't give a shit. But when you're 20 and fucking all full of gusto and I don't give a fuckism,
fuck the rules.
And you're like, I'm going to sit wherever I want. And then these people that paid fucking cash money for their season tickets are like, you need to get the fuck out, please. Just be fucking cool.
Be cool, get the fuck out. Yeah. Don't make me go get the usher.
Yeah. But, okay, let's get back to this fucking movie, though. Because here's the thing. This is my quick capsule review of The Disaster Artist. So I watched The Room, Riff Tracks, all that sort of thing. I'm not going to get back into the whole thing. All I know is that way too much sex, funny as fucking fuck, way better with the Riff Tracks. This was so goddamn funny. I thought this was so goddamn funny. 21st century movies that have made me laugh my ass off, and they are as follows. Jackass, where really after 10 minutes, when they're the rent-a-car crash derby 5000 or whatever the shit, at the very beginning of the movie, I'm streaming tears.
Oh, yeah.
Tears of goddamn joy.
I remember watching that movie and laughing that hard.
Cackling to my heart's content. When I went to go see Napoleon Dynamite with our friend Brian Adams, and there was four, I swear to God, literally four people in the movie theater, and there was the one part where they're doing the poster slapping on lockers and urinals and everything to the A-Team theme, crying my fucking ass off. So goddamn funny. Hot Fuzz, where they just say, you and your monkey. Does he mean you or that? And then this fucking move. I'm doing...
It's not Judge Judy in the execution.
I'm doing Patty Considine. And they're like... Yeah. That fucking part.
You've got a mustache.
I know. Leslie Taylor was fucking murdered!
I would add to that list... That's a good list. Jackass and Hot Fuzz. I would add to that list Borat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And for me, Bruno. Bruno was a particularly good experience for me because... My mother-in-law wanted to go see... She had seen Borat. And so for Mother's Day, she wanted to go see Bruno.
What a fucking day!
She didn't... I mean, maybe she did or just didn't... None of us really thought about it, how sort of uncomfortable a movie it was going to be. Because Borat's funny. It's got some sexual humor. But Bruno's, riding a fucking stationary bicycle with a dildo on it and, fucking some Filipino kid with it.
The last scene when they're in the steel cage match in Arkansas.
Oh, yeah.
And that guy's face, his fucking brain is just completely broken. I know exactly what you're talking about.
So, my wife and I, Josh and Brian, took my mother-in-law, the five of us, to go see Bruno on, a 3 o'clock in the afternoon showing. And it was, a half-full theater.
Yeah.
And I was the only one of the five of us that was just laughing. And they still tell stories about how hard I was laughing in that movie and how embarrassed they were.
How hard were you laughing?
And then I would have to, I know we're talking about this century, but it just didn't make it in under the cut, but I gotta add South Park Bigger, Longer, Uncut, which was 1999.
Yeah.
So we're talking about movies from 2000 onward, but the pantheon of movies that made me laugh so hard. I went and saw that with Brandon Peterson and Jamie Duvall.
Oh, there you go.
In Las Vegas.
Oh, shit.
And, well, I mean, it literally almost fell out of my chair. I was laughing so hard.
Yeah. I can definitely, look, if I'm crying laughing, then it's, then I'm going to watch it again. And I was crying laughing during Disaster Artist, because take away all the references to The Room.
Yeah.
All the fucking little Easter eggs and all that sort of thing. And yeah, he acts exactly like Tommy Wiseau presumably would act in real life or behave in real life. But all the little nuances where, I don't want to give too much away. There's one part in there where it's Greg Sestero, who wrote the book that's based off of the movie Disaster Artist that James Franco wrote and directed and all that sort of thing. And he's moving to Los Angeles, and his mom is very, very worried because, look, I don't know about, like, you just met this guy 3 days ago, et cetera, et cetera. She comes out, sees him in this brand new BMW, like, super, super white, like, really sketchy guy that doesn't look...
Doesn't look her son's age.
Absolutely not.
Looks considerably older than her son.
She asks him, how old are you? Oh, I'm same age as your son. He's like, oh, well, guess what? I'm 15 today. Oh, happy birthday. I'm fucking... dying.
Yeah, there's lots of those little moments that are kind of difficult to explain, but when you watch the movie, they are laugh out loud funny. I laughed out loud a lot during this movie, but yeah. I gotta say, like, the movie has a lot of things going for it, and it has a lot of positive points, and I totally recommend people watch it.
Yes.
And watch The Room beforehand, or at least watch the clips beforehand. I think that'll help.
Yeah.
But the number one thing with a bullet this movie has going for it is James Franco. I want to hate James Franco. I really do. I've tried very hard. But he just keeps making me like him. Because, I mean, he'll make some bullshit like Annapolis, or he shows up in some fucking Jason Statham movie as the villain or some shit. You know?
Wait, like, what movie was that?
That movie was like Homegrown or some shit like that. Like,
I didn't know about that!
Homefront. Yeah, Franco was like the villain in one of those movies.
Like the fucking redneck guy that Statham was fucking fighting?
Yes.
Holy shit!
Franco was like a villain in one of those movies.
I gotta look that up. Keep talking.
Yeah. But more often than not, Franco surprises me, whether it's something like Spring Breakers or this, The Disaster Artist, or just the regular straight-up comedies he does with Rogan and all those guys.
Yeah, David Gordon Green.
David Gordon Green, Your Highness.
Pineapple Express. I like The Interview.
I think The Interview is funny also.
This Is the End?
This Is the End is a funny movie. And by the way, I don't know if we ever talked about it on this show, but I saw Why Him with Franco and Cranston, and I thought it was fucking funny.
Yeah?
Like, I mean, not in the same realm as those other comedies we just mentioned, but watch it on cable in your underwear at night, funny? Yeah, it was funny.
127 hours?
Love 127 hours. Actually, we were talking online, Jason Hornsby, and where the fuck's Hornsby been, by the way?
He's in Cali right now.
I know, but his presence on social media has disappeared in the last week.
I don't know.
Hornsby loves... Get on the fucking internet, motherfucker.
Yeah, we need to have your input on this shit, all this sort of thing. Rise of the Planet of the Apes, that's the only Planet of the Apes I really give a shit about.
Yeah.
For nothing else, because of him and like the whole thing and all that sort of thing.
And that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about. You're like, oh yeah, Franco's going to play a scientist, sure. And then you watch the movie and you're like,
holy shit, Franco's a scientist.
Yeah, I buy it, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah, for this movie has Franco in spades. He's in practically every scene in the movie. And when he's not in a scene, you're really just wanting it to get back to him. And he's fantastic. He's laugh out loud funny. He's doing an impersonation, but... he's doing it very, very well.
He's so fucking good.
He looks like him. He sounds like him. I'm sure he's bringing stuff to the part that wasn't there, but you wouldn't know it because they do some side by side, some split screen stuff at the end of the movie during the credits with the real Tommy Wiseau's performance in the movie up against Franco's performance, and it's dead on balls accurate, to quote Marissa Tomei and My Cousin Vinny.
Jesus Christ. Let's go through. I'm
going to read. Talking about Franco.
Let's read this fucking. This is almost an interesting, like, you almost have to appreciate the fact that, look, you know, you can only guise what you see, what you read, super douchey, you know, oh, this fucking perfectly looking guy, blah, blah, blah. But look, Spider-Man. 1 and 2.
No, I forgot about those.
He was in Wicker Man, for God's sakes.
Not the bees!
Knocked Up in the Valley of Elah.
Who the fuck was he in Knocked Up? Oh, he was there on like
himself.
The E-Entertainment part where she like yaks into a garbage can or whatever.
Pineapple Express.
So good in Pineapple Express.
Milk. 127 Hours. The Green Hornet. Your Highness. Those are all back to back to back, by the way.
Rise. I can love Your Highness, by the way. That movie doesn't get its due.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes. He was in the Iceman? Like the serial killer, like Hitman, Iceman?
Was he in that? Yeah, I guess he was in that. Yeah. He was.
Shit, he was Oz the Great and Powerful.
Wait, was he in that?
This is the End, Lovelace. Those are all back to back to back.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. For every good one, there's also a Oz the Great and Powerful or whatever, but yeah. Doesn't matter. You don't remember that. Like, I forgot that movie was even made.
Homefront as Morgan Gator Bodine.
Yeah.
Then he did the Veronica Mars movie, which was fucking crowdsourced or whatever.
Street cred for that one.
Then The Interview. Then Don Quixote, the Ingenious Gentleman of La Mancha. Apparently he was in that. I have no idea.
He's made a lot of independent movies, a lot of which he directed. Done like two Faulkner, movies.
The Adderall Diaries, The Little Prince, Sausage Party, King Cobra,
Sausage Party.
Why him? Fuck, he was in Alien Covenant. I completely forgot about that because he's only in it for a hot minute.
Yeah, literally.
A hot minute. So anyway.
Yeah, I like Franco. This movie's worth seeing, just for Franco, but I do think you have to see the clips beforehand.
I will also let you know, because you did not stay until after, like, it's like the fucking Marvel thing, like the Marvel syndrome where
a mid-credit scene and a post-credit scene.
Stay for the end.
Stay for the post.
Yeah, but, look, the audience loved it. If you're with a good audience that's also, like, kind of in the swell, like, you kind of get involved in the whole laughter of thing, man, they were
loving it. Comedies work that way. Comedies and horror movies work that way.
Yeah, so definitely recommended. I would see it again, absolutely, without a doubt. Speaking of which, let's just get into this, because Golden Globe nominations were released this week. And I want to get your take on the major ones. Let's go by, first off, Best Motion Picture Drama.
Okay.
Call Me by Your Name, Dunkirk, The Post, The Shape of Water, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Two of those. Yeah, I mean, it sounds pretty much like what's going to be at the Oscars, I'm guessing. The Post is kind of the odds-on favorite. Surprise, no Florida Project, but the Golden Globes is not as good at picking up those little indie movies like the Oscars are.
Okay, well, let's go with the other side of it. Best Motion Picture, Musical or Comedy, The Disaster Artist, Get Out, The Greatest Showman, I, Tonya, and Lady Bird.
Yeah, this is the rare year when there's probably two of the ones in comedy which have a real legit chance of getting an actual Best Picture nomination at the Oscars.
Should be what, Get Out and Lady Bird?
Get Out and Lady Bird.
Yeah.
And it's weird that Get Out is in the comedy or musical category. And Get Out is a comedy. I mean, it is. It has comedic elements, but it's primarily a horror movie.
Is it a black comedy, Chris? Is that what you're trying to say?
Comedy. Yeah, it's definitely dark. It's dark.
God.
It's a brown comedy.
Best Director Motion Picture. Guillermo del Toro for The Shape of Water. Martin McDonagh for Three Billboards. Chris Nolan for Dunkirk. Ridley Scott for All the Money in the World. And Steven Spielberg for The Post.
This kind of thing always happens with the Golden Globes because they nominate so early. They try and get in so early that you end up with a couple things, and I'm not saying necessarily that All the Money in the World is one of them, but we don't really know yet. Nobody's really seen that yet. I mean, I'm sure there's some people have seen it, but this happened a couple years ago. Like, they nominated Johnny Depp for Best Actor in The Tourist.
Okay, I do remember that. Do you think, because you were talking about this on a podcast show a couple of months ago, I would say, on The Real Thing and More Like Radio.com. We actually do have a name, by the way. Chris Nolan directed Dunkirk. It's basically a director's movie. Like, he wasn't really making it for anybody other than directors, like, fellow directors, like, this is what I got, this is what you see, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think, or is it a fair statement to say, that Ridley Scott got nominated for All the Money in the World, in spite of the fact that it's been nominated so early, because of the fact that he had to switch out Kevin Spacey's part for Christopher Plummer's part, and now Christopher Plummer actually got nominated for the goddamn movie that Ridley Scott got directed in, which basically means that, like, look, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
I mean, the Hollywood foreign press kind of likes Ridley Scott anyway, I think, right? I mean, he kind of always gets nominated.
Yeah.
And it's a safe bet, you know, he's a solid director, even if you think of his movies that weren't huge hits, like the aforementioned Alien Covenant, it's still pretty big, major movie. He's fucking 80 years old, and he's directing movies that are, you know, have $200 million budgets and things like that.
Yeah.
And All the Money in the World looks pretty damn good. I want to see it. But I think he just gets cred because he's Ridley Scott.
It looks like a Tony Scott movie.
It does look like a Tony Scott
movie. It's like super, super quick cuts and all that sort of thing. Like, it looked really interesting. Like, I'm going to see it now, but...
I mean, Ridley Scott had a pretty big year, if you think about it. Because, I mean, he made Alien Covenant, which came out this year.
Yeah.
Now he's got another movie coming out at the end of the year. Both major releases. Not like he made a big movie and a tiny little indie movie. You know, he made those two. He was also producer on Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, yeah.
Which is crazy.
Best performance by an actress in a motion picture drama. Jessica Chastain for Molly's Game. Sally Hawkins for The Shape of Water.
Again, has anyone even seen Molly's Game? I don't even know if anyone has seen it.
Probably not, but obviously when we do get to see it, we will be reviewing it. It was former figure skater, some Olympic skater that starts running her own high-stakes poker game for 10 years running. That's all I know about it.
Right, yeah. Well, that's, what's his name? Aaron, wrote the Facebook movie.
Oh, Aaron Sorkin.
Aaron Sorkin.
There you
Jesus
go.
Jesus Christ.
Sally Hawkins for The Shape of Water. Frances McDormand for Three Billboards. Meryl Streep for The Post. Michelle Williams for All the Money in the World.
I feel like this is going to be Meryl Streep for The Post and Frances McDormand for Three Billboards are going to be going at it at all the award shows.
I feel like Michelle Williams...
I mean, like, competing against each other.
I feel like Michelle Williams gets nominated for a lot of shit.
She does. Like, she's one of those actresses now that just, like, they love everything. And she is fantastic, you know? I mean, Manchester by the Sea, she was nominated for Best Supporting Actress last year.
And she was in there for, like, a hot 10 minutes?
In it for 10 minutes total. And she really, even the rest of the movie that she's in, it doesn't matter. She got nominated for one scene at the end of the movie, and I kind of agree with it, because that one scene is incredible.
There you go.
You're, like, watching it going, holy shit, like, this is a fucking actor.
Speaking of people that get nominated all the time, best performance by an actress in a motion picture, musical, or comedy. Judi Dench for Victoria and Abdul. Helen Mirren for The Leisure Seeker. Margot Robbie for I, Tonya. Saoirse Ronan for Lady Bird. Emma Stone for Battle of the Sexes.
I think Saoirse Ronan for Lady Bird and Margot Robbie for I, Tonya.
Yeah,
I think those are legit nominations.
Best performance by an actress in a supporting role in any motion picture, which would include Mary J. Blige in Mudbound.
A lot of press about Mary J. Blige in Mudbound.
Hong Chow in Downsizing, the new Alexander Payne movie. Allison Janney in I, Tonya. Laurie Metcalf, who you were lauding her praises in Lady Bird.
She's got to be the odds-on favorite to win everything. All the award shows.
Octavia Spencer in The Shape of Water. Best performance by an actor...
Octavia Spencer ever done a performance that's not the exact same? Have you ever seen an Octavia Spencer performance that wasn't her doing exactly what she does?
You know, I was thinking...
Like making a sassy face into the camera with her hand on her hip.
I was thinking to myself, I was like, is that the same chick that Billy Bob Thornton is like, hey, come over here for a second, and Bad Santa like, oh, Willie, last time you told me to do that, I didn't walk right for a week. Like, I don't think that's the same.
I don't know. I hate Bad Santa. Yeah. But she's just, you know, she's good at that, but it's just the sassy face into the camera, defiant sassy face with the hands on the hips.
Yeah.
Like, every movie.
Best performance by an actor in a motion picture drama. Timothy Chalamet for Call Me By Your Name. Daniel Day-Lewis for Phantom Thread. Tom Hanks for The Post. Gary Oldman in Darkest Hour. And Denzel Washington for Roman J. Israel Esquire. It's going to go to Gary Oldman, right? Like, this is supposed to be his year.
It's so such a screamy performance in the preview.
Isn't he always screamy, though? He's always screamy.
I mean, Oldman has some... I like Oldman a lot, and I know what I like about him is not his screaminess. I like the sort of subtler moments in his performances.
Okay.
He's known for screaming, you know, from time to time, like, you know, Get Me Everyone and all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
But man, like every shot they show in the preview for The Darkest Hour is just him screaming and screaming and screaming. I guess he's the odds-on favorite, but yeah, I don't know. Daniel Day-Lewis, everyone knows it's his last performance and all this kind of stuff.
Let me. I'm gonna skip around
the old skipperoo
for the show's sake, so that we can transition. Best performance by an actor in a motion.
Your time.
By an actor in a motion picture, musical, or comedy. Steve Carell, Battle of Sexes. By the way, Steve Carell, did you ever, in your wildest imagination, when he was on The Daily Show, like, ever think, like, man, he's going to be, like, solid actor, The Big Short, 40-year-old virgin, Battle of the Sexes, which he's now nominated for?
Well, there's so many actors. So many of the guys that came for The Daily Show, you know, when John Oliver, and then Stephen Colbert is like the number one late night talk show for like a year now.
Right, but they're not in major motion picture acting. Yeah, like they Carell. can do Eat, Pray, Love, or they can do, you know, something involving, you know.
It is true. Back when they used to do Even Stevens, like, you know.
How to drink responsibly.
That's right. Yeah, it's crazy that he is now this, I mean, he's a, you know, leading man.
Yeah, fuck
it. I like him. I like Steve Carell. Oh, of course. I didn't get to see Battle of the Sexes and I wanted to.
I'm sure we will eventually.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, MoviePass. Ansel Elgort, Baby Driver. James Franco, The Disaster Artist. Hugh Jackman for The Great Showman. And Daniel Kaluuya for Get Out.
Man, the internet backlash for Baby Driver is in full effect.
Let me tell you something. I'm glad you brought that up. Fuck those guys.
Fuck those guys.
Fuck those motherfucking guys. Because
nobody's saying that Baby Driver is the greatest movie ever made.
It is
all
not.
All we're saying is Baby Driver is a lot of fun.
Top three movies that I've had fun with thus far this year do include, in no particular order, Thor Ragnarok, The Disaster Artist, Baby Driver.
Yeah. Baby Driver is pretty mindless, honestly. It is. You know, I mean, it does have a lot of...
Especially, like, the last 20 minutes?
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, the story is cliche. True. The characters are one-dimensional. True. But for years we've been seeing superhero movies and Transformer movies and shit like that, and everybody's answer is, oh, come on, it's just for fun, you know? Like, why can't you just sit and watch a movie like this and enjoy it for what it is?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I would say about Baby Driver. Like, don't rack your brain trying to figure out why everyone's so nuts about it. I am nuts about it because it's fun to sit through. And I watched it again at my house, and it was equally fun.
Man, I'm telling you, that opening. The opening!
Yeah.
From credit, as you would say, soup to nuts, before the actual logo of the movie comes on, where it's just like the technical aspect of it. There's no CGI. They literally broke the axles of three different Subaru WRXs to try to make that shit happen.
Yeah, and I would say that makes it more enjoyable to watch.
Fuck yeah.
Knowing all that.
Yeah. So, okay. Best screenplay, motion picture. Guillermo del Toro and Vanessa Taylor for The Shape of Water. Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird. Liz Hanna and Josh Singer, for The Post. Martin McDonagh for Three Billboards. And Aaron Sorkin for Molly's Game.
It's weird because the Oscars breaks up screenplay into Best Adapted Screenplay and Best Original Screenplay.
Yes.
And they don't break up anything else. It's all just, you know, actor, actress, supporting actress, blah, blah, blah. There's no comedy or musical. But the Golden Globes breaks up everything. They break up everything between drama and comedy and all this kind of stuff. But they don't break up screenplay. They just have screenplay. So they put all the originals and all the adapteds in the same category. It's tough call. What are the nominations for that again? Can you read them again?
Guillermo del Toro and Vanessa Taylor for The Shape of Water.
And Brian Castaneda is fucking having a fucking aneurysm right now as he's hearing
you. You know what? Here's another thing, too, while you mentioned that. I feel like we do the show for, like, 10 people. Huh. I really... Yeah. Are you good with that?
Two of them are us.
Like, I talked way too long during that part. I probably shouldn't have said as many curse words during this part.
Oh, okay, I don't listen to the show.
You don't listen to the show?
No.
No, okay.
No, do you? Well,
yeah, of course I do.
I think about listening to it, and then I'm like, I don't get all weird, and I don't want to listen to myself, and then I just can't listen to it.
I need to at least so that I can try to figure out what I fucked up on. Like, yeah.
Tell me what I fucked up on.
Well, no. Honestly, like, I watch old shows of Moxie LaFemme and Big Bang Boom Cabaret in order to make sure, like, okay, that worked, this didn't work, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, you know what? That's fine.
Yeah.
I enjoy hearing the show. Okay, I enjoy hearing the show.
Okay, so Greta Gerwig for Lady Bird.
Uh-huh.
Liz Hanna and Josh Singer for The Post. Martin McDonagh for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, and Aaron Sorkin for Molly's Game.
Wow. So weird that they don't break it up between original and adapted. We don't have a front runner for the Oscars or for the Golden Globes this year. It's kind of one of the weird things about this year. I guess it's going to end up being the Post. Post might end up walking away, but it also might be a year where all the awards get spread out among a lot of movies. There is no Titanic this year. You know what I mean? There is no.
What was the thing? I know I posted in line our movie group that the winner of the last 3 years of the Independent Film Channel, Independent Film Festival Award, or anything.
Yeah, National Film Critics.
Yeah, Circle. And it's been, and it was Moonlight, and then it was, oh shit, the fucking newspaper movie Spotlight.
Yeah.
And then the one before that was, god damn it, I don't know.
There's always some statistic like that. It goes, and then it breaks, and then they go with some other one. They're like, well, the one that's won the fucking...
3 years running, though.
Yeah, 3 years running, but I didn't really care for any of those movies. Spotlight, Moonlight. Spotlight's fine. I don't ever want to see it again.
Moonlight.
It's that kind of shit that bothers me about award season is you end up getting a lot of awards given to movies like Spotlight and Moonlight that you're never going to watch again.
Okay.
You don't give a fuck.
Okay, well... I'm glad that you said that as we transition into our next review of The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com. Best performance by an actor in a supporting role in any motion picture, which would include, but not be limited to, Sam Rockwell in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
So glad to see his name on there.
Finally, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Christopher Plummer in All the Money in the World. Who fucking knew that shit was going to happen?
Talk about return on investment. Dude agrees to make a movie literally... It can't have been 6 weeks ago.
Right.
I mean, it was less than 6 weeks ago that he said, yes, I will be in your movie. I will come to the studio and do reshoots with you on your major release.
Right.
Because you fired Kevin Spacey, and yes, I'll do it for X amount of dollars. And then not 6 weeks later, he gets nominated for a fucking major award.
Hey, man. He's
insane.
He's good in The Insider. That's good enough for me.
Good in The Insider. Good in Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. He's good in a million movies.
Bunch of other shit.
Over the years, yeah.
Richard Jenkins.
Kind of music.
In The Shape of Water.
I love Richard Jenkins.
Armie Hammer in Call Me By Your Name.
I love Armie Hammer.
And
I do like Armie Hammer a lot.
And Willem Dafoe in our next review, The Florida Project.
It's a shame because I like Willem Dafoe very much. But we saw The Florida Project. You and I both saw The Florida Project.
Not together. We saw it independently.
Saw it separately.
Yes.
Both saw it at the Polk Theater, which is a very charming, you know, I don't know what they call them, atmospheric theater.
It's one of only, oh gosh, like a handful in Florida, and I think...
Less than 100.
50 in the United States, yeah. Maybe 50 to 100 in the United States.
This is one of the old school theaters that's got the blue ceiling with the stars and stuff. It makes it look like you're in like a... Like an Italian villa or some shit.
Got an organ playing before the actual movie starts, people.
I love going to see movies there. I just love being there. It's a really cool old building.
Yeah.
Elvis played there. You know, it's been there for 100 years.
Yeah, but this particular movie, The Florida Project, was actually made in Orlando by the same director that had directed Tangerine.
Yeah.
And I'm looking up his name right now. Sean Baker,
yeah.
Correct. He had filmed the movie Tangerine on an iPhone.
Yes.
Basically three iPhones. He filmed it. It was...
showed up on a lot of end-of-the-year best-of lists.
It had been...
I never saw it.
It had been accepted to the Sundance Film Festival. It was critically lauded, et cetera, et cetera. And on top of that, this particular movie, The Florida Project, has been now running at the Polk Theater now for the last 3 weeks.
Which is bizarre. They never do that.
In fact, they had the producer do a Q&A at the Polk Theater last Thursday. Because I got a text from Tina Buttercup Sunset, my girlfriend. She's like, hey, I don't know if you're interested, but he's there. He's going to be doing a Q&A. Are you interested? I'm tired.
I was interested because I hadn't seen it at that point.
Right.
But the timing didn't work out for me. I couldn't go.
Yeah.
I ended up going on a night where the movie was being sponsored by fucking local church. So I had to sit through the fucking pastor rambling intro to the movie that he had not even seen yet either.
Apropos of nothing. I mean, like, it doesn't matter. Like, religious beliefs or whatever. But what particular church was this?
It was the First United Methodist Church. Like, it was like the First United Methodist group for the state, but also the local First United Methodist Church.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they didn't get too preachy. I mean, it actually was very sort of altruistic intentions. They were sort of getting together about homelessness, and this movie kind of dovetailed with that agenda, and so they were kind of doing like a whole thing about that.
Okay, but
you know, it's not like we held hands and prayed before the movie started.
No. I know your proclivities as far as religion and all that sort of thing.
Not a religious person, but
neither am I. But give the people as far as Florida Project what this movie's about.
So the Florida Project is a movie about a single mom who is a stripper at the beginning of the movie. She's raising her daughter. They're living in a sort of kind of a roadside hotel over, you know, in Orlando near the Disney area.
OBT,
you know, kind of a rundown.
For those that don't know,
$30 a night hotel.
Orange Blossom Trail. Look it up.
Sort of a shitty area.
Sort of.
Yeah, definitely a shitty area. And they're poor people that are living in this $30 a night hotel. And they live there. I mean, it's their home, you know. I mean, they've been there for months or whatever it is. And it's basically the story told mostly through the eyes of this six-year-old girl who lives at a hotel with her mother, who is a alcoholic and a stripper and, you know, drug addict and all this sort of stuff. And that's pretty much it on plot. That's pretty much it. There is a manager for the hotel, played by Willem Dafoe, who's kind of got a heart of gold and maybe a little bit of a history with abuse himself, is sort of implied as a child.
Yeah.
And there's some other characters that sort of show up in the movie. Another girl who's living in the hotel with her son. But much of the movie is told through the eyes of these 5, 6, 7-year-old children that are kind of running around and just sort of playing and living their lives, kind of unaware of what's going on in the world around them with their parents and the hotel and so on and so forth.
It does have to be said that these kids are also running around without adult supervision, but it's also during the summertime, so they're on summer break. It's not as though they're not going to school or any of that sort of thing. I'm going to tell you something about this movie. So let's just get right to the point. This movie is boring for about 90% of the movie.
Yeah.
It's pretty goddamn boring. I get the fact that, you know, it's supposed to be real, it's supposed to be, you know, authentic sort of thing, but there wasn't really anything that was interesting about this movie, this particular movie, until Willem Dafoe gets involved. And even then, he's not really doing anything. I understand that he got nominated for a Golden Globe. And
that's an aside.
It's the swell of what you're talking about as far as, like, award season, and everyone wants to get nominated and wants to put nominations and accolades on this movie and that project and that sort of thing. No pun intended. But I've seen better.
Oh,
I've seen better from Willem Dafoe.
This is the exact kind of movie that I can't stand that comes out in award season. It's, you know, I mean, somebody's got the idea. They drove past some shitty hotel and they said, well, I'm going to write a story about a mom raising her kid and living in this hotel. But there is no plot. And that's what bothers me the most about these kind of movies. There is no plot. It's what they would call like a slice of life about these characters living in this hotel. There's no plot. Nothing happens. You just sort of watch this mom be trashy and these kids run around without supervision.
Now, okay, let me stop you right there. I'm going to play devil's advocate, okay? There's no plot. That's what you're saying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there opportunity for plot based on the circumstances that are presented in a
movie? Yeah, there's a couple. They have characters present, and there's a couple times, actually, when I thought the movie was going to sort of kick into a gear and have kind of a plot, and it just doesn't. They don't make use of those characters. They don't make use of those opportunities. It just sort of meanders, and you watch these characters be who they are, and some people like that sort of thing. My problem, another problem I have with the movie is, okay, you want to make a slice of movie, it doesn't have a plot, we're just watching characters go through their life. Okay, well then you must have a point. What are you trying to say? And I don't really think this movie has that much to say either. It just wants to show characters in miserable situations, and it wants you to just sort of sit on the outside and observe those situations and those people.
When you watch the movie at Polk Theater, what was the reaction from everyone when the movie ended?
It was uncomfortably inappropriate. And I was part of it. You know, I mean, there was, like, scoffing and like almost laughter.
What was the demographic of the people that were around you?
Oh, I'm sure it was very much the same as you. I mean, it was, you know, it was all people from, I would say, you know, the vast majority of the audience was 40 or above, or 30 and above.
Okay.
There was no young people, and it mostly skewed higher than that. It's probably, you know, mostly 45 and up.
Okay. See, when I saw it, on a Friday night, 7 o'clock showing, and let's say like 50, 60 people that were there. I mean, because honestly, you know,
it's more than that for money.
It's a critically lauded movie.
Yeah.
So everyone's interested in seeing
Florida.
It's local. Yeah, it's
local.
You are literally an hour away from where this movie is filmed.
They mentioned Polk County in it.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, one of the girls, not the mother that you were mentioning before, but the little girl. Where the hell is her name? I'm gonna find her name right now. Not Valeria.
Mooney.
No, Brooklyn Prince.
Brooklyn Prince.
Who is apparently the main little girl. She's from Davenport.
Mooney.
Yes. Yeah. She is really, really good in it because there are certain things that I wasn't expecting her to say, how to act. But let me go back to my original point. So everyone scoffed.
Did the same in your theater?
And they were of an upper demographic, you know, like 50s, 60s, retired, et cetera, et cetera.
By the way, I've been there. I've seen independent movies there. I've seen deep, hard independent movies there where people, like, applauded at the end of them. You know what I mean? I saw bedroom and stuff like that.
There was
no
applause like that.
Right.
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, I will tell you something right now. So this movie was, you know, it's based on personal experience and all that sort of thing. As far as how you're going to like it and if you do like it and all that sort of thing. And I can appreciate how authentic, quote-unquote, it is and all that sort of thing. But at the same time, I work in child welfare. So when the whole DCF, foster home, shitty parents, raising their shitty kids, you know, let's call it for what it is. And the first thing that I said to myself out loud with the girlfriend to my left, I need a new job.
Yeah.
Because this is not a fun movie.
It's not entertainment.
Especially when you're going through, there hasn't been really anything of consequence going on. You're just seeing people, families, child and absentee parent go through the motions for an hour and a half. Then the drama starts around the 90th minute. And then you think, this is the problem that I have with this fucking movie. I'm going to tell you right now. We talked about this before. Before we were actually talking about on The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, is that, look, Willem Dafoe, great actor, okay? He's been a stellar actor.
Oh, yeah. The
majority of his career. But there's a part in the movie where they establish in the movie that this guy cares about kids. He's all about kids, protecting kids, et cetera, et cetera. And then later on, at a very crucial part in the movie where he could have very easily made a substantial move to help a kid out, help these kids out. And he turns his back. Like, then you completely erase the whole meaning of why he was even there in the first place. To which, I get it, he's supposed, like, it's not my business, I'm going to go smoke a cigarette, I'm going to walk around the parking lot and all sort of thing. But you would think that there's some sort of redemption to it. Not, spoiler alert, the girl goes over to her other friend's house or apartment or whatever, like, oh my gosh, I'm so sad, I'm never going to see you again, blah, blah, blah. And then they run, hold hands, go run into Walt Disney World, and then cut to black, and that's it. I know Sean Egan was trying to explain it to me, like, oh, they're trying to escape into a fantasy world, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I get that they're trying to escape, obviously.
That's a cop-out, though. That's such a cop-out.
First of all, they had logistic problems with that, which is, like, that's miles away from where they are. I mean, these kids ran miles and got there.
Yeah.
And by the way, how'd they get in? Just walked in? You ever been to Disney World? You can't just walk in.
They will take a drop of your blood, your firstborn's name.
Yeah, especially two little kids just, like, bolting through the fucking door. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know. I had problems with those logistic things. But what you're saying about, you know, Willem Dafoe, and that was a screenwriter's choice that character didn't get involved with what's going on. But that's part of the bigger problem with the movie that I have, which is, doesn't have anything to say.
Yeah.
It just wants you to sit and watch, like you said, them go through the motions. It has nothing to say. What are we supposed to make of this at the end of it? What am I supposed to do with this? Am I supposed to want to see this again? Well, I definitely don't. Am I supposed to go out and take this information and do something with it? Well, what is that? I have no idea.
I'll tell you what, and that is this. Take care of your goddamn kids, Chris, which yeah. I don't know that you're doing, but please, anyone that's yeah. listening, so that you don't end up like these fucking people on OBT living in squalor, because I've been to places like that before. Like, you don't know this. Like,
oh,
I've been to fucking hotel, motel, motherfucking Holiday Inns where they're just all fucking... I don't know how people live like that. They're hoarding in a 650 feet square room where there's just shit everywhere. There's clothes everywhere. Like, how the hell do you live like that? Like, just go and get a fucking job. You can't party all the goddamn time.
Right.
You can do whatever the fuck you want if you're just by yourself. Once you have a kid, all bets are fucking off.
And does this movie do anything for that agenda? I mean,
no.
Like, no. As a matter of fact, it kind of glorifies the relationship that this shitty mom has with her daughter, because it shows them sort of frolicking around, you know, when the mother sort of knows that the daughter's going to be taken away from her, they're sort of frolicking around and having fun in the rain and dancing and watching fireworks and shit like that. It's like, why, am I supposed to be happy about this character right now?
Well,
like,
I've
just watched an hour and a half of her being a shitty mom. Like, why are we glorifying her relationship with her daughter now? Like, she's more of her doing the same.
Well, this is also the other thing that I was noticing towards the end of the movie, is that anytime anybody has any sort of involvement with DCF, all bets are off. Especially when, you know, you don't have a choice with who you select as your caseworker or your case manager or any of that type of thing.
Right, nor should you.
But it's also a matter of there's not a lot of foresight that goes into that, a lot of thought where, hey, your kid ran away. Can you help us get your kid back so we can take them away from you? And that shit happens all the fucking time, which is why child right. welfare and the whole system as a whole fucking sucks balls. And right, again, and again, I reiterate, I need a new job.
But that's, you know, my reaction watching that scene,
yeah.
and what you're talking about is DCF is taking the child away from the mother in the hotel, in the doorway of the hotel. The daughter runs off.
Right.
And the screenplay plays out, and the film is shot in such a way that the audience is meant to feel sorry for the mom and kind of vilify DCF because this happened. And my reaction is, well, no. DCF's only there because she's a shitty mom.
Yeah,
the situation only exists that the kid could escape in this way because she's a shitty mom, and they're attempting to step in and do something about it.
Oh, and here's a reminder, she also beat the shit out of her former best friend,
right.
and she was fucking with a fucking door partition when her kid's doing the... I don't know.
This character in this movie, and by the way, the actress that played the part, she deserves the nomination, not Willem Dafoe. I mean, she was incredible, and she's an unknown actress that they found on Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she was incredible, because you hate this character.
Yeah.
I hate her.
She does a very good job of being hateable.
I'm not sure that's the impression they were... I got the impression that that's not exactly what they were going for, though, because they make her into a hero in that moment in DC with DCF in the doorway. But they kind of do, don't they?
No. I mean,
I'm not saying I think she is.
No. But I get what point that you're trying to make, but also, I don't know. I'm probably not the right person to ask, because anybody else should watch this movie, and maybe guys, and give them... They need to give you their opinion of what you're talking about, because I was already so like, look,
too close to it. You just can't even get outside of it.
There's a reason why that phone number was called, and there's a reason why those kids are being taken away, and there's a reason why that mom is acting the way that she is, because...
Oh, wait. We just saw the reasons for an hour and a half. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Take the kid away.
Yeah.
Oh, the kid ran off? Guess what? That's also your fault.
Would you watch this again?
Absolutely not.
Would you recommend this?
Absolutely not.
Neither would I.
No. This is the kind of movie that critics in New York and L.A. love and applaud,
yeah.
and most audiences, the audience you watched it with and the audience I watched it with, which,
yeah.
again, the Polk Theater only shows independent movies. You only get to see independent, art house, Merchant Ivory type movies there. They
yeah.
don't show anything else.
Right.
And those people come back a week after week after week to see independent. So the only place in town where you can consistently see art house movies. That those audiences love art house movies. Your audience and my audience hated it. Like, I'm from Florida, and I have kids. I don't need to see a movie with shitty Florida people like acting like fucking trash. Yeah. I can see that any time. I see it at my job, too. Not as much as yours, but I do get to see quite a bit of it.
Right.
And I also have kids, so I get to watch them be shitty sometimes, you know? I don't need to see kids being shitty. This movie has nothing to say, has nothing to offer. I would not recommend it. Anybody that tells you it's good is probably a critic in New York or L.A.
Oh.
I'm sorry. It was garbage.
No. It's a hard watch. It's definitely a hard watch for sure. We are at a minute three, Chris. Would you like to review the last movie, or would you like to cut it off right now? I'm going to give you the option.
Let's talk about it.
Talk about it? Okay. So as we wrap up on The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com, we appreciate your patronage. Follow us on Twitter, @THEREELTHINGMLR. Facebook as well. We need followers. We implore you. Because that's the only way that we're probably going to be remembered, presumably, is it 2017? 32 years from now, which would be the year of our final review for the evening. And thank you, MoviePass. Thank you, MoviePass. And in fact, thank you, Regency 20, because I didn't think this movie was still up.
Yeah.
But it was at some very odd times.
It's still playing.
It's still playing right now.
Yeah, there and in Ybor and in Highwood 20.
Blade Runner 2049. Now, before you get started, I do want to mention that I had watched the original Blade Runner again some time ago because I hadn't had an opportunity to go see Blade Runner 2049 with Tina and our friend Keith from London, from Chelten.
Keith.
I'm telling you. Keith Wright. And his name is KEITHWRIGHT. And his email is KEEFWRITE. So he's got a sense of humor. But he's like, you need to go see this movie. If you can see it in IMAX, great. We'll talk about that in a second. But I was watching the original Blade Runner, and there was a part in it. I was like, have you ever heard of the band Kent?
Yeah.
Isolde. Yes. So you'll remember this song, which is track 5. It's called OWC.
Yeah, I remember this.
Which is the original score from who the hell did the original score with Ridley Scott from 1982? Evangelist?
Yeah. Shit,
yeah, so anyway.
No idea.
So I remember, no, that is who it is. I just don't know how to pronounce it because I'm fucking stupid.
Ah.
Yeah, so, but they play that. I was like, oh my gosh, it's so awesome, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, this is a continuation of that movie that was released in 1982, directed by, and again, fucking stupid, so I don't know how to pronounce his goddamn name, but he directed Arrival, Prisoners, Sicario.
It looks like Denis Villeneuve to me, but I always hear it pronounced Denis Villeneuve, which feels, it's got to be an incorrect,
like,
American
pronunciation. It's like Saoirse Ronan, and I was like, Cerise?
Swire?
Oh, God. And then I hear it on NPR, and they're literally like taking all 11 letters from his name, and they're condensing it into two. I was like, Dean Bill?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm so dumb.
Danny V,
there you go. We'll call him Danny V from now on. But anyway, he directs it.
Yeah.
Ridley Scott produces it.
Which, Danny V, by the way, made Prisoners with Hugh Jackman and Jake Gyllenhaal. Good.
Yes.
Sicario, right?
Yes.
Arrival? The Arrival, which I like very much. This is probably my favorite of his movies. And now he's made this. He's kind of becoming one of the more sort of dependable young up-and-coming, not up-and-coming, I mean, those are four big movies that he made.
I mean, he's been slated to direct Dune now, right?
Which is a huge project.
Yeah.
Huge.
Huge. It's going to be huge. Up in space. The big space. such assholes.
So, yeah, it's the sequel to Blade Runner. This movie picks up years later, was it 20 years later, after the events of Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling is in it. He plays a Blade Runner. And spoiler alert, although it's not really a spoiler alert because it's revealed within the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Which I appreciated because, look, again, I reiterate, I'm fucking stupid. So, you know, you almost have to have some sort of a primer prior to this movie happening, and it does that perfectly.
It does. It's got an opening scene where Ryan Gosling is a Blade Runner who is retiring a replicant that he has found, played by
Dave Bautista.
Drax.
Yeah.
Very good scene.
Do me!
Very good scene where Ryan Gosling is retiring this replicant, and it's revealed in that scene, 5 minutes into the movie, that Ryan Gosling is himself a replicant.
Yeah.
Which is interesting in and of itself, because the first Blade Runner has this mythology that has followed it around in the last 30 years. The ultimate question, which is, was Decker a replicant or not?
There you go.
Even the makers and stars of the movie don't agree. You know, I mean, Harrison Ford is adamant that Decker was a replicant, and Ridley Scott is adamant that he is not.
Okay, now let's stop here, because I also know that I've seen Blade Runner twice. I saw it from God, I'm gonna sound so fucking douchey and pretentious. I saw it from my film theory class at Florida State University. I also saw
watching the Florida Project right now.
Yeah, I know. I also saw Goodfellas, by the way. So fuck off. Yeah. So I saw that, and then I saw it again. But have you seen the original cut and the director's cut of the original Blade Runner?
Yeah.
Which one's better?
I feel like the director's cut didn't even come out till like 1994 or something like that. We didn't get to see that.
Yeah.
The one without the voiceover is the one that's generally considered to be better.
Okay.
The voiceover is kind of unnecessary.
Who's the voiceover done
by? Harrison Ford, by Decker, yeah.
So then I saw the one without the voiceover.
Yeah.
So
okay. That's pretty much what you see these days, because it's one of those things where it's now been accepted that that's the better version.
Okay.
But, Blade Runner was not a success when it came out in 1982. It was a bomb.
Right.
It wasn't even, like, critically acclaimed, necessarily. Like, some people, you know, loved it, and some people hated it, and some people didn't give a shit.
Hated it.
It became a cult classic, you know, in the years to come. The mythology has followed the movie around for years, which is, you know, whether this main character played by Harrison Ford is a replicant or not. This movie starts out with Ryan Gosling as a Blade Runner, and it's revealed immediately, almost, that he is a replicant himself. Starts off really strong, I thought. And by the way, Gosling falls into the James Franco category for me, which is, I want to hate him.
Hey, man.
I want to dislike him so badly.
I'm gonna Google this shit right now. Cause
I just want Ryan Gosling to not be inside my brain.
hey, boy. I know you're thinking about my ass.
I just want to not like him, but it's kind of the same thing that I imagined.
And Tina, the girlfriend, is like standing right behind you.
Yeah.
Giving some lip service.
She's like, I want to
look at the humps. All but that humps.
She's like, I want him in my brain and then some.
Yeah.
Let's go through it. Remember the Titans, The Notebook, Half Nelson, Lars and the Real Girl.
No.
I know you hated
it. Yeah, you left out The Believer. That was kind of his breakout movie.
The Believer.
Yeah.
Crazy Stupid Love.
No.
I know you hated it. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't.
No. I know you hated it. I'm sorry. I like it. Drive.
Oh, fuck.
The Ides of March. Gangster Squad.
God, Drive sucked.
Only God Forgives. Lost River, The Big Short, The Nice Guys.
Just him standing there with his arms folded and a fucking toothpick and a shiny windbreaker.
We've moved past that.
I haven't moved past it.
Only God Forgives.
It's a terrible movie.
The Big Short, The Nice Guys. Remember The Nice Guys?
I mean, if he's a driver.
Jesus Christ.
Why the fuck? Why is he living in this shitty apartment? Why? Does he have another job?
He works
at a fucking mechanic shop.
He's a fucking stunt driver in the movie. Like, he's a stunt guy.
So he works at a mechanic shop.
And he's a stunt guy.
And he's a stunt guy.
And he's Baron
And
he's
banging. And he drives getaway cars.
And he's banging Carrie Mulligan. What else do you want from him?
Yeah. He's got three jobs, and he lives in this shithole.
You sounded like what's his name from Election. But you fucking not.
Yeah. Doesn't make any sense. He says like 7 words in the whole movie.
Doesn't need to. He's a badass. That's why.
God. Why do people like that movie so much? I don't get it.
It
says 7 words and then he stomps somebody's head open in an elevator.
Listen, I only like that movie now because of Hotline Miami. I'm sorry.
The game. Baby Driver is essentially the exact same movie as Drive, except it's a comedy.
But. Yeah! That's a really good. Man.
So why do we need to watch Drive anymore?
Ah, shit. All right, let's get back to it. Ryan Gosling, though, if you were going to pick an actor, good-looking actor, because Harrison Ford was a good-looking actor when the original Blade Runner was made, just came off of Star Wars, and Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? You could do worse, because he's very aloof. Okay, in fact, I'll even tell you this. There was a couple of lines in there I was like, man, a couple of zingers in there by Ryan Gosling, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. I can't remember verbatim off the top of my head what
I can't
what
either,
said.
But
you know what I'm talking about, right?
I do. I had the same reaction, and he's walking kind of a tightrope because he's meant to be a replicant, so he doesn't have, you know, a ton of emotion and things like that.
But almost like self-aware.
But he is a little bit self-aware.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
kind of some of the stuff that the movie sort of plays around with, which is he has his own apartment. He's employed by the police department as a Blade Runner, but he has his own independent life. And in that independent life, as a replicant, a robot, he goes home and has another class of robot, which is his girlfriend, who is 100% AI.
Yeah.
And literally a hologram created by this contraption on the ceiling that projects her into the room with him.
Yeah.
And it's a very fascinating relationship between the two of them. And he's sort of on a case and the details of the case that he's working with the replicant that he's retiring and so forth. That's not really important. No. I will say that what I found fascinating about this movie was the Gosling character, his relationship with the police department and society in general, and his relationship specifically with this other lower rung on the social ladder of AI, which is his girlfriend. I found that relationship fascinating.
Joy.
Joy is the name of the AI that is his girlfriend. It's just a sort of mass-produced AI that you can kind of mold into your own...
Like a mental fleshlight.
It's a mental fleshlight, yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, let's just call it for what it is. Because I know that there was also kind of a complaint about the movie that... Well, not necessarily every single female character in the movie, but most of the female characters in the movie were either... You know, sex objects or this or that, and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But I will tell you what. Whoever played the heavy, the villain, if you will, of this movie, which was
Love.
Yes, played by Sylvia Hoeks.
She was fantastic.
Yeah, she was fucking badass. Like, that chick needs to get some more work, because there was like a weird range where. You almost kind of didn't expect her to act in a certain way. Like, oh my gosh, you're kind of crazy. Like, now you're definitely crazy.
Yeah.
I need to stay away, stay a million miles away from you. I'm going in the opposite direction from where you're at.
So for me, this movie started off really good.
Okay.
I loved Gosling.
Okay.
I loved a lot of the supporting characters.
Yeah.
I love the idea of these different levels, which is you have humans, and then you have replicants, and then you have these other AI. So there's like... sort of toying around with the idea of what it's like to interact with something that you have created.
Right.
You know, I mean, like, the humans have created the replicants, and the replicant is interacting with this AI girlfriend, which, in a way, he purchased her, yes, but he has also created her to be what he likes, which is this wife who stays at home and makes dinner for him,
and
comes up with these different concoctions and tries new recipes.
Yeah, we hope that you are satisfied with our product.
Right, and I found those kind of fascination, those sort of ideas and stuff that the movie was playing with kind of fascinating.
Like modern feudalism.
Yeah, and I thought it was going in some really interesting directions there.
Yeah.
The case that he's working on, what he's doing with the police and the details of the replicants he's trying to retire and so forth,
yeah.
It was kind of secondary to me. In the first half of the movie, I think it's sort of secondary to anyone that's watching it.
Right.
And then the second half of the movie, it kind of comes into the forefront, and they sort of tie it into the old Blade Runner movie.
Yeah.
And the other stuff kind of fades into the background. And that, for me, is when the movie goes south.
Okay.
Like, I still enjoyed it, but I thought they would have done better to not try to tie it so much into the original movie and to kind of do their own thing. They get way away from doing their own thing, and they're essentially just making a sequel, whereas the first half of the movie just feels like a whole new creation. I mean, it really just feels like another story from that world. And they bring it back to the Blade Runner with the character of Rachel, who was played by Sean Young, who, as it turns out, spoiler alert, was somehow, as a replicant, able to conceive and birth a child.
Right.
the mystery, part of the mystery that Gosling is trying to get into is whether or not this child is still alive and can be found. Because they know that Rachel died somehow.
Right.
And this leads them to the Harrison Ford character, which, by the way, the movie's 2 hours and 45 minutes long. Harrison Ford doesn't show up until 2 hours into the movie.
Okay, let me ask you this. How many times did you check your watch?
I would say...
Twice for me. Because
I checked it more than twice.
Because I was checking, I was like, man... Because he's on the fucking poster, by the
That's
way.
That's kind of why...
I was like, look...
It's kind of an unfair question, because you are wondering where the fuck is Harrison Ford.
No, seriously, like, I'm not... Yeah. I'm 90...
Not necessarily checking your watch because you're bored with the movie.
I'm not bored with the movie.
Yeah.
I should preface that right now. I'm not bored with the movie. I'm just kind of wondering, I'm like, damn, I'm an hour and a half into this movie. When the fuck is Harrison Ford going to fucking show up?
Yeah.
Hour and a half. Hour and a half is your barometer. The other thing, too, by the way, and I know that you and I had kind of differed on this, is that... I personally felt that Harrison Ford was a little bit more alive in this movie than he was in The Force Awakens because you also made a fantastic point, Chris, which will be revealed on the real thing on morelikeradio.com. This is the reason why you're much, much more intuitive and you're more smarter than Hyuk-Pul County.
You got a pretty mouth.
Yeah, right? Harrison Ford. Give me the last three franchises that he's been now in and what he is doing in each of those franchises.
Well, I mean, obviously he's famous for the Han Solo character in Star Wars, and he's famous for the Indiana Jones character in that trilogy.
Right.
But probably third in the pantheon of his IMDb movie filmography is probably Blade Runner.
Right.
He's now made a sequel to all of those movies, and in all three of those movies, he's like... trying to find his son, or his son is trying to find him and or kill him. Like, in all three of those movies. Or in this movie, it's son or daughter. We're not really sure exactly.
Right.
For the vast majority of the movie, we don't know if it's a boy or a girl, but his child, right. He's trying to find his child, or his child's trying to find him, and they're trying to kill him, or they're not trying to kill him, we don't know.
Right.
Like, that's every single movie he brings back, like, that's what's going on.
So fucking funny.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's weird. Like,
yeah.
He's so... For me, he was so, like, kind of out of it and aloof in this movie yet again. Like, he just felt completely bored. I thought the movie just kind of... Well, it didn't grind to a halt, but it kind of switched into a gear when he came into
stop.
It.
Okay, let me predict what I think you're trying to describe. It's almost like... They're like, man, you're doing really good. Really good. No, stop, 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 stop. Stop, stop, stop. No, you were doing so well. You're doing so well. Oh, fuck.
That's okay. Exactly right. That's how I felt with this movie, because I was loving it for about an hour and a half. I was loving it so much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they do get it, and it does get into some mystery territory, because you don't really know exactly where it's going. You don't really know...
It's a good thing, though.
It is a good thing.
It's a great thing.
Because the mystery, you kind of think you know the answer, and Ryan Gosling sort of thinks he knows the answer to the mystery that he's trying to solve about this child and who this child is. And as an audience member, you're like, okay, maybe that is it. But there's in the back of your mind, you're like, that's a little obvious.
Yeah.
That seems a little too simple.
I think I know what scene you're talking about, and it's like, man, like, this is... Okay, so we should be wrapping up in the next 15, 20 minutes? Like, man, there's a lot more going on.
Something else is happening
here. This is the other thing that happened when I was watching this movie, too, is that... So, there is the scene where they meet, for the first time, Harrison Ford, Ryan Gosling, their respective characters, Kay and Deckard. And they're in Las Vegas, and they're fighting, and there were two things that I'm reminded of. So apparently, on the actual set of the movie, while they were making the movie, Harrison Ford actually did punch Ryan Gosling in the face, of which there is an awesome picture, which I will post up, because I have to post it up. It's so fucking funny. But he punched Ryan Gosling, and immediately after he threw this haymaker, Harrison Ford was just like, oh, God, I'm so sorry, on his face. And Ryan Gosling has got the most dumbfounded, like, I got fucking hit in the fucking face. And his face must be, like, shoved to either the left or right. Can't remember what it was. But the other thing, too, was kind of weird. Is that was the second time that day that I heard the song I Can't Help Falling in Love with You by Elvis Presley. Because the first one that I heard was when I was watching Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, which is also with Asian Elvis, with Sam Rockwell,
right.
Who got nominated. Final Circle Unturning. It was really weird. I feel like I would recommend this movie. I would watch it again. It's a little long.
It's too long.
It's a little long.
It's 2 hours and 45 minutes. And yeah. By that time, it feels 2 hours and 45 minutes. I will say, 2 hours into the movie, you're like, if this movie wraps up in 5 minutes, it's my favorite movie of the year.
Right.
And then it gets to a point where, and there's still stuff happening at the end of the movie, so you can't totally fault it, but there's quite a bit that could have been cut. It didn't need to be 2 hours and 45 minutes. And I hate to constantly have that complaint about movies, but it's true. Like, a movie needs to, it can't outstay its welcome, or you sort of start to hold it against it. You know, you kind of hold it against it. And by the way, in years to come, that's going to keep it from becoming the cult classic that Blade Runner did. Blade Runner is quite a bit shorter than this. It has a simplicity to it. It has kind of a... I mean, there's a little bit of a sounds ridiculous, but there's a little bit of a kind of a poetic, a little poetry to the original movie.
Right.
You know? I mean, it's very simple, it's very straightforward, and it has a very simple question that it's kind of making you think about, and it doesn't get too much into detail, it doesn't take too long doing it, and it's over before you know it.
See, and here's the thing, too, is that I'm not a big techno-punk aficionado or any of that sort of thing, but I appreciated it. I actually like this more than the original. I'm sorry.
I can see how people would have that reaction.
I mean, it's... And I don't know whether it's the direction of Denis V. I don't know if it's like the... Like, they picked the best director that's available right now.
Fantastic. He's to direct this movie. Perfect choice.
God damn, this fucking score, though, like, almost, like, blew my goddamn eardrums out. Because I'm almost afraid now that if I took our mutual friend, Tina and I's, Keith Wright's advice to go see this in IMAX... I would be deaf right now, because every single time when it goes, which he's been doing forever, like, I remember the score for Sicario, and when they're just, like, going, they're jettisoning,
and Arrival.
And Arrival, too, and they're just going over Juarez, Mexico, like,
yeah.
I'm literally trying to fit the microphone in my mouth on the real thing, I'm more like radio.com, But as far as, like, the cinematography, the scope, like, and especially how I was watching this movie, and I'm thinking to myself, like, man, this is fucking future shit. This is sci-fi, as sci-fi as you can get with, like, the holograms, the AI, the fucking, means of conveyance.
Just the sort of atmosphere of the cities that they're living in, even Las Vegas, sort of post-apocalyptic.
Because, look, you think about it. We're almost to 2020. We're 2 years away from 2020. So we're at that spot right now where all the movies that were released in the 1980s and the 1990s, like, in the year 2019.
Well, we've surpassed them in some cases.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But there's not a lot of surprise anymore for anybody, like any Joe Schmo or Johanna Schmo, that are going to be watching these movies. Like, you need to get fucking wowed by, you know, things that could be feasible in the future.
Right.
And I feel like this movie at least gives you... several examples of that actually being able to happen.
Yeah,
like, feasibly
it does,
able to
which
happen.
Which is the same thing that the original movie did. I mean, that's how people felt. That's one of the things that people still talk about when they talk about the original Blade Runner is it was a futuristic movie that seemed very, very feasible.
Yeah.
It seemed very likely, you know, that we might have flying cars and that L.A. would turn into this sort of hellscape with these massive, you know, jumbotrons everywhere and, buildings that shit fire into the sky.
right.
For whatever reason, I'm not sure. Hey, let's build a building that shits fire into the sky. This movie did another thing that I appreciated, we already sort of talked about it a little bit, but, there is this mythology that's gone on for 30-something years around the original Blade Runner about Deckard being a
replicant
or not.
Yeah.
And I was worried that this movie would take a hard stance on that and give some sort of answer to that question. It doesn't really, but I would argue that there is a scene in which they do
give away.
And it's actually my favorite moment. It's not my favorite scene of the movie.
Yeah.
And by the way, thumbs up or thumbs down, I give a thumbs up. Like, I liked this movie.
No.
I have some problems with it.
If I were going to rank this for the entire year, this would be at the very back end, but I'd say top 10.
For me, and I think for you too, like, one of, like, the number one question for me about a movie, whether it's good or not. If we, there's probably 10 questions you need to ask about a movie if you want to say, is it good or not? But the first question is, would you watch it again?
Yes.
And we ask that all the time.
Yeah.
And I would watch this again, for sure. Yeah. I would be like, God, it's so long, but I already know that I'm going to want to watch this movie again. And
for
me, that alone makes it a good movie in some way.
Yeah.
So I was worried that it was going to give an answer to that question about Deckard being a replicant or not. It doesn't outright say one way or the other. The plot point isn't there. They don't get into it.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, they very kind of smartly skate around it with this mystery that's being solved.
All right.
However, there is a scene in Las Vegas when Ryan Gosling and Deckard are sort of found out. And the Jared Leto's people, which, by the way, we
talk
about Leto
in
this movie. I've been enjoying this movie so much.
Yeah.
And then fucking Leto shows up.
Right.
Like, as I think I told you the other day,
yeah.
Leto showing up in this movie was about as welcome as a fucking hand reaching underneath my movie seat and grabbing hold of my nutsack and yanking on it. Like, that's about how fucking pleasant it was to see Leto show up. Anyway.
Yeah.
So they're in Vegas, and Gosling and Harrison Ford are aware that Leto's people are coming in. Like, their ships are flying in. They've found them out.
Yeah.
They sort of run off. Like, they're... And I'm not even sure where Harrison Ford's running to, but he runs off somewhere, and he's actually going to his old Blade Runner car. That's where he's going, which is a cool moment. He's running because he's trying to fucking hightail it out of there.
Yeah.
He runs into his vault, and he slams the door shut, and he's running to the car, and he slams the short door shut on Gosling. He leaves him out there. He's just going to leave him there.
Yeah.
But Gosling, the replicant, just fucking plows through a brick wall.
Yes.
Because he's a replicant.
Right.
Like, they have this superhuman strength.
Yeah.
It's a really cool moment because it's like, it's kind of, it's meant to be comical, and it was a laugh out loud moment for me. Because, you know, Harrison Ford, Deckard, like, runs into the vault, slams the door, runs towards the car, because he's trying to lock Gosling out, but boom, he just, like, plows through the wall because he's fucking superhuman.
But then,
robot.
But then it makes sense because Kay, Ryan Gosling's character in the movie, like, he's getting the shit beat out of him the entire goddamn movie.
Right.
The entire fucking movie.
But he's a replicant. He can do that, and Harrison Ford cannot.
Ah.
Right. That was my thing.
Like, shit. I didn't get that until just now. Holy fuck, Chris.
Yes. I think that's a... I don't think they were doing a fucking... hard answer there, but I do think that little moment was them taking a stance on that.
Shit.
That was my read on
it. All right.
And they did it in a way that I enjoyed, because it's
subtle.
It was subtle, and it was also funny. I mean, it was actually very, very funny.
Whoa.
That was my favorite moment of the movie.
We're going to have to end here, because I don't know. I got nothing. And I don't want to end on Leto, because, look... Method acting, we were talking about this earlier.
Yeah.
With the method acting, stop with the method acting. No more method acting. You know what, again, let's go back. Heath Ledger...
Did Gene Hackman need the fucking method acting?
That's what I'm... Let's go through it. Heath Ledger killed himself. And then Jared Leto sending used condoms and all this other shit and doing all this crap.
Marlon Brando's fucking psychopath.
Gene Hackman, though, as you were saying, didn't need that. What is the hallmark of a great actor? You can act... as a different person, and be a cool guy that can just go get a beer after the fact.
You don't need to be Jim Carrey and fuck your entire life up.
That's right. Which I will see. I will see Jim and Andy. In the meantime, though, ladies and gentlemen, we are The Real Thing on MoreLikeRadio.com. Chris Whetton, thank you for blowing my mind.
Always a pleasure.
Because Jesus Christ, like that, I didn't even think about that. Because again, I'm fucking dumb as shit.
Well, I don't think it's that. I love the original Blade Runner, so for me, I'm like breaking down those little moments.
Yeah.
I say I love it. I'm fond of it.
And you know what? I was going to end with OWS by Kent, but I'm in the mood. Fuck it. We're gonna end with the song "Finally," hashtag "Finally" by CC Peniston from the Disaster Artist. So
finally.
There you go. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. I can't spell it out enough. Happy holidays, ladies and gentlemen. We will be back. Our review of The Last Jedi in due time. Until then.